I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is Corey J. Enos, Public Outreach Supervisor for the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Las Vegas Valley Water District, and the Springs Preserve. Corey joined the organization more than 15 years ago and is responsible for supervising a team that coordinates and implements public outreach efforts related to water resources, construction outreach, and utility operations. The Springs Preserve is hosting the 14th annual Black History Month Festival in 2 weeks to commemorate the contributions of African Americans to Southern Nevada's rich history and culture. Corey, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate it.
For those who aren't familiar, what is the Springs Preserve?
The Springs Preserve is kind of a facility that's dedicated to sustainability here in Southern Nevada. It's really difficult to explain sometimes. It's 180 acres. It's got everything from walking trails, botanical gardens, butterfly habitat, exhibits each month, and it's adjacent to the Nevada State Museum as well. So there's really something at all stages for everybody of every age to do at the Springs Preserve all throughout the year.
Okay. And how is it connected to the Southern Nevada Water Authority and the Las Vegas Valley Water District?
The Las Vegas Valley Water District operates the Springs Preserve, but it's dedicated to sustainability, water efficiency. You can get planting ideas for things that are indigenous to us here in the desert that are water efficient. We have plant sales a couple of times each year. And again, it's dedicated to sustainability and living in the desert in an environmentally friendly fashion.
Nice. I always associate the Springs Preserve with kind of the birthplace of Las Vegas because we're named for the meadows and the springs. Is that accurate to say that?
That's absolutely correct. And so there are still groundwater wells that operate on that site, but that's exactly right, the birthplace of Las Vegas. And you are correct. Las Vegas means the meadow. And at one time, there were springs that are there on site at the property of the Springs Preserve.
Nice. Okay. So tell us about the 14th annual Black History Month Festival that's coming up later in the month.
Yeah, we're really proud and continue to grow and get better. It's something that we started 14 years ago that was attended by a couple of hundred people, and it's grown to the point where last year was attended by 4,200 people. And it's essentially the largest single day Black History Month Festival event here in Southern Nevada. It's a labor of love. It's something that has, since its inception, belonged to the community. I say that the Springs Preserve hosts the event, but the event really does belong to the community. And it gives us an opportunity that we are proud of to entertain, to educate, and to celebrate the contributions of African Americans, not just here locally, but nationally as well.
What's this year's theme?
The national theme for Black History Month this year is Black Resistance. And so each year, in conjunction with the national theme, we think it's important to honor people in our community who have made great contributions and great strides in helping shape the trajectory of one of the most vibrant cities in our country. Las Vegas is known as the entertainment capital. And so in conjunction with the national theme this year, in the past, we've chosen a single person as an honoree. But this year, we're doing something a little different. And to go along with that theme, we are going to honor what was called the Moulin Rouge Agreement. One of the things that's been so crucial to us here in Southern Nevada is entertainment through the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and 40s and 50s. But there were times when African-American entertainers weren't allowed to stay in the same hotels that they were performing in. And in 1960, it reached the point where they were thinking, those entertainers in the Black community was thinking about boycotting going to the Strip until they were allowed to stay in those hotels. And at the 11th hour, the powers that be came together to circumvent that and created an agreement called the Moulin Rouge Agreement that essentially desegregated the Strip and allowed Blacks to enter through the front doors and to stay at the same hotels that they were performing in.
And the Moulin Rouge Agreement refers to the Moulin Rouge Hotel and Casino?
I think that's where it was signed, and so that's probably why it's entitled that way. But yes, the agreement essentially desegregated the Strip to allow for segregation to end on Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, if I remember my history correctly, I believe the Moulin Rouge was the first integrated hotel on the Strip. And fun fact, the sign was designed by Betty Willis, who also designed the Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas sign that's so famous.
That's correct. It was the only integrated hotel that Blacks could go and share the same space in the same crowd. I don't believe Moulin Rouge was on the Strip, but it was. It's a great part of the historic fabric of our community. And you're correct. It was the only integrated place where those performers could go and entertain and fellowship with other folks who weren't of the same race.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was groundbreaking. So it's great to have that as part of our history here.
No doubt. And we have a great historic photo exhibit with photographs that were taken at the Moulin Rouge with the performers back in the day. We have historic photos back then. We have leaders of yesterday, today, and tomorrow highlighting, again, those folks who have made incredible contributions in our community.
So besides the photos, what other sorts of exhibits and performances will there be at the festival?
It really is a super fun event. It starts at 10 a.m. It's February 18th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And from the time the event starts through 4 p.m., there is some form of entertainment that's taking place. There's singing performances, dance performances, spoken word artists. We have arts and crafts for kids. We have carnival games for kids. We have face painting for kids. We have caricature sketch artists for kids. Really something for everybody of all ages. My kids love going to it. My parents love going to it. There's a cooking demo that takes place. We have story time where local authors will read from their books. None of this would be possible without the contributions and the generous support of folks in the community. People like Cox Communications, Southwest Medical, Optum Care, MGM Resorts, and the National Bank of America. The response from the community with this event has been completely overwhelming.
So last year you said you had about 4,200 people. What are you expecting this year?
Well, hopefully, fingers crossed, it can be around that same amount. We want it to be as heavily attended as possible, but we also want the guest experience to be as great as it can. We try and keep the prices down. Admission is $9.95 for adults and $4.95 for kids ages 3 to 17, and kids 2 and under are free.
Yeah, that doesn't cost much at all. that sounds like prices from 50 years ago.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, we made a concerted effort to keep the price down and keep it affordable. And again, it's part of why this is such an important community event. And again, that's made possible by our tremendous community sponsors that have contributed so heavily to the event.
Nice. So you mentioned that the Springs Preserve is 180 acres. Is the festival spread out throughout Springs Preserve, or is it concentrated in a specific area?
It goes all throughout the facility. It extends back to the gardens, the botanical gardens area. The main focus is typically the garden amphitheater where the majority of the entertainment takes place, but it goes all the way back. There's a house that belonged to the first African-American landowner in the state of Nevada named John Howell. And we have a walk with our archaeologists that take you out to the house. So there's really something at just about every single area of the preserve. So it's typically a beautiful day in mid-February. You can get out, sit on a lawn chair, watch the entertainment. You can get great food. We have extraordinary food vendors who will be there. And you can walk and see the facility, enjoy the entertainment, and interact with a lot of people, great people in our community.
Cool. Okay. Now you mentioned a lot of fun things that are going on. Are there musical performances as well?
Yes, there will be musical performances. We like to change it up a little bit every year. Most of the performers are performers who are born and raised right here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And the breadth and depth of the talent that's represented is truly extraordinary. So we have folks who have performed on stage like The Voice, singing performances, dancing performances, step performances, spoken word artists, and a lot more. So we encourage everybody to come out and enjoy the day. I promise that you won't leave unhappy.
Okay, sounds awesome. So where can people find out more about the festival or purchase their tickets in advance?
At springspreserve.org. You can also go to our social media sites on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but you can get those tickets early at springspreserve.org.
Nice. Okay. So the website once again is springspreserve.org, springspreserve.org. And the 14th annual Black History Month Festival is taking place on Saturday, February 18th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Springs Preserve. There's free parking at the preserve and overflow parking as well across the street at Meadows Mall. So once again, everything you need to know, if you want to find out more or if you want to buy your tickets, just go to springspreserve.org. springspreserve.org. And Corey, I want to thank you so much for being here, letting everyone know about this fantastic festival and in its 14th year. I'm sure it's been getting better and better every year. So it sounds like a great time. And I appreciate you being here and letting everyone know about it. Thank you.
The thanks is all mine, Heather. We appreciate you helping us get the word out about this important event. So thank you.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is Jeff Jones, Board Chair of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, or NAPFA. Jeff has long been an active member and volunteer within NAPFA, serving as Symposium Director, President, and Chair of the South Region Board, as well as ad hoc committees and mentorship opportunities. Their new survey shows that 87% of working Americans are feeling stressed about their finances due to inflation. Jeff, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather, for having me.
So what exactly does NAPFA do?
So we are the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. We are a network of 4,500 advisors across the country that are committed to delivering fee-only and fiduciary financial planning and investment management services to our clients.
What does fee-only mean?
Fee-only is an indication of how an advisor is compensated. There's a number of compensation models out there, and people are very familiar with commissions for an advisor who puts you into, say, a mutual fund, and they're earning money by putting you in that fund. There's a very confusing term called fee-based, which means that an advisor can sell you a product and earn a fee off of that. But what fee-only means and how it's different is that you are only paying fees directly to your advisor for the services they are delivered. Sometimes that's on an hourly basis, sometimes it's on a project basis, or sometimes it's on an ongoing basis for clients who are working with that advisor on an ongoing basis.
Okay. So what have you discovered about financial stress and inflation?
Well, it's been very difficult for the American worker to balance inflation and retirement savings or just regular weekly and monthly spending. The rise of food, utilities, energy, and it's causing them financial stress. As you mentioned earlier, nearly 9 out of 10 Americans are feeling stressed about their finances. Nothing comes as a surprise there. But most of those say that if their employer offered financial wellness benefits, that it would actually help them at work, at home, and make them more productive in the office. And we're used to seeing employers offering benefits like healthcare, vision, dental, maybe some psychological and mental wellness services. But what we're not seeing is very many employers offering financial wellness, at least not beyond anything like a 401k or 401k match or perhaps a health savings account. We're recommending that employers consider bringing in a fee-only fiduciary advisor to work with their employees to help lower financial stress, answer questions, help them to understand how to balance inflation with saving at the same time.
Okay, so I imagine there's a lot of people listening saying, yeah, that's great. I would love it if my employer did that, brought in a financial advisor to talk with us and gave us some financial wellness benefits. But, you know, the employee can't necessarily do anything about it. How do you recommend that they bring that up to the employer and put the suggestion forward?
Typically during the end of the year, when you get into open enrollment, is usually one of the best times to engage human resources if your company is large enough, or if it's a small production or small firm, to speak with the owner. And there are advisors all over the country. As I mentioned, NAPFA has 4,500 members scattered about. So there are local resources. If the employer is not necessarily willing to do that, then it may be the right time for the employee themselves to consider working with a financial planner.
Yeah. Now, typically a lot of people tend to think that it's not worth hiring a financial planner or a financial advisor because it costs more money than what they're going to save. So what are the best ways to find a reliable financial planner, stick within a budget, and make sure that it's actually a relationship that's going to pay off financially?
The best place to find a financial advisor is through online tools, online search tools, and NAPFA has one at NAPFA.org called Find an Advisor. When you are finding an advisor there, what you're going to find is someone who is confirmed as fee only, who is a fiduciary acting in the best interest of that client or that consumer, and someone who is a certified financial planner. This means they have the education, the examination, and they've committed to an ethical standard while having the experience. And that particular tool, you will find where you can enter a zip code to find an advisor that's close to you. Call and meet the advisor, ask about their compensation methods, because there are services that are offered on an hourly basis. So a consumer may be able to go in, spend an hour or two, let that advisor help them to develop a budget. And if they're successful in implementing that budget, they may be able to pay for that advisor's fees in a matter of a few weeks, months, depending on how much the total cost is.
Okay, so where's the tipping point where it makes sense for a consumer to spend money in order to save money?
That's a tricky question, and this is where the advisor or the planner can help. What they're going to be able to do is to drill down into those expenses to understand what they're saving. Are there any tax advantageous tools? Perhaps a 401k, a contribution that is made pre-tax, may lower your overall tax bill. And so there's a number of saving strategies that these advisors are going to be aware of that can help the individual client for their unique situation. And so it's very difficult to give a broad range of where the tipping point might be.
Right. So even the act of spending a little bit of money on a financial planner might actually net back more than what you've spent on that service.
It absolutely can. The term is typically called advisor alpha, which means they are adding on top of the savings that you may already have in place by giving you better advice and making your dollars, you know, work a little harder or in a better method for you.
Okay, nice. So how many financial advisors are there available in the state of Nevada? Are they spread evenly across the country? So no matter where we live, there's one nearby?
There are many that work in that particular area. As you might expect, larger cities tend to attract a larger number. However, many advisors now will work remotely, and that's certainly an inquiry you would want to make. If you are perhaps, say you're a physician or a dentist, there's going to be advisors that specialize in working with dentists, or they may be working with artists. So you may find that there's an advisor somewhere else in the country that has a specialty in what you do. And many of them are working remotely now. We certainly do. We work with clients in 18 states based out of Huntsville, Alabama. So with technology, there's really not a limit in where or how you can engage an advisor anymore.
Wow, that's fantastic. I didn't even think about that. Okay, so once again, the website is NAPFA.org. That's NAPFA.org. NAPFA.org stands for National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. And you can click on Find an Advisor, type in your zip code and find one near you or find one that works remotely. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being here today, talking to us about financial stress and how people can overcome it and giving us the tools and resources to find a financial advisor or a financial planner that's going to work. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, we're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere. So the police should be reaching out to this community. And this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is Dotan Weinman, Assistant Director in the Division of Marketing Practices, Bureau of Consumer Protection for the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC. The FTC has released a scam alert warning consumers how to protect themselves from payment fraud. Dotan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar with all the different branches, what exactly does the FTC do?
So the FTC is the nation's consumer protection agency. We work to promote competition and to stop unfair, deceptive, and fraudulent conduct in the marketplace.
Okay. What are some of the ways that scammers try to steal money from consumers through payment fraud?
So what scammers want to do is take your money, and what they want to do is also keep it and make sure that you have no recourse, that you cannot go and get it back. And what they do is they tell you how to pay, and they will select those payment methods that are easiest for them to keep the money and for you not to get it back. Some of the most popular ones are gift cards. Another one is wire transfers. Another one is mobile payments like Venmo and PayPal and Zelle. Fake checks, cryptocurrency, all of those methods are very, very popular among scammers today.
Okay, so what are some of the common scenarios that they're presenting to the victim in order to get that money, to get those payments?
They vary widely, and I would encourage people to go to our website, ftc.gov/consumeralerts, to learn about most recent scams and the most pervasive ones. But generally, I think we all got calls of people pretending to be from the IRS or the Social Security Administration or Amazon. Some of our grandparents got calls from people that purport to be relatives in need of money. Those are the kind of scams that we see a lot of them, a lot of investment scams related to cryptocurrency, people that tell you that if you give them crypto, they'll make a lot of money for you from what you're giving. Those are the kind of scams that are very popular today.
So they're playing on emotions, it sounds like. So either greed or fear or concern for the loved one, somehow playing on heightened emotions instead of logic.
Correct. A key thing of every successful scam that we've seen is to create some emotional or stress situation that will cause the consumer to act quickly and often without consulting with others. And those situations that I suggested, if somebody says, I really need the money now, I don't have time to wait, or if it's an investment opportunity that tells you, you have to act now, because if you are not going to buy it now, it's not going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah. What are some of the red flags that people should look out for so that they know immediately without having to think too deeply that, hey, this feels like a scam?
A number one red flag is if somebody asks for your money in a certain specific form and says, that's how I need to get paid. So if it's not a credit card, which gives you the most protection, it will always going to be a red flag. Specifically, the type of payments that we just discussed, like gift cards and cryptocurrency and wire transfers, mobile apps, those are always red flags, especially if the person tells you, I need to be paid that way. Another red flag is, as we spoke about, you need to do it now. And attempting to cause you to do it right here without taking a moment to think about it, or maybe even consult with somebody, which is always a good thing.
Yeah. You know, some of these scams are pretty sophisticated. So, I mean, there's ones that they just call you or they just send an email. And we know some of the red flags to look for in phishing emails and that sort of thing. But for example, I almost got caught in a scam where it was someone had contacted me and said, hey, I want you to be my videographer for this movie shoot. And I'm going to send you this check, money order check, whatever it was, and you should deposit it and then use that money to rent the equipment. And then the rest of it's yours. And luckily, the bank, to me, I looked at it and it looked legit. It totally looked like a real money order to me. But when I gave it to the bank, they obviously spotted it right away. So are these scams just getting more and more sophisticated as we go along?
Yes, scammers tend to be entrepreneurial and think about new ways. In the scam that you just described, the fake check, it can be even a real check sometimes. They will steal somebody's ID and they'll ask you to deposit a check into your account. It will be a real check and the money will be deposited. But then after some time, most banks are not going to be as quick as your bank was, and they're going to figure out eventually, though, that the money is not legitimate money. And the money that will be sent out from your account to the scammer, that's real money, and you likely won't see it again. But the money that you deposit is fake, and it's not going to stay in your bank account. And in the scenario that you described, never deposit a check from somebody who then tell you to wire the money back or to send the money back. And never deposit a check from somebody that you don't know.
Yeah, okay. So what happens after the fact? So if someone is listening to this, or, you know, a scenario comes up and they act out of emotional fear or a sense of urgency, and they stop to think after the fact and say, wait a second, I think that was a scam, but it's already too late because they've already sent the payment. What do they do then?
So it really depends on how you paid. If you were lucky enough to pay with a credit card, you should call your bank and essentially charge back the transaction, and the bank will fight it on your behalf. If you paid with a wire transfer, like through MoneyGram or Western Union, you should immediately contact those companies and ask them to reverse the charge and tell them that you got defrauded. In some situations, it would be much... And by the way, the same is true for Zelle, Venmo, PayPal, the mobile apps. In some situations, it's much harder. Cryptocurrency, you have nobody to talk to. So in those situations, you should report that fraud to the FTC, and you should essentially take whatever steps that you can to protect your wallet or the account where the money comes from to prevent identity theft and further theft from your account.
Yeah. Now, cryptocurrency is an area where a lot of scams happen for the exact reasons that you mentioned. But a lot of the cryptocurrency scams are, for example, spoofing or pretending to be someone else. So the scammer will call or email and say, you know, they're with a charity, or we're with the IRS and you have to pay your taxes with crypto. Now, that doesn't make sense, obviously. But in the moment, of course, there's that panic aspect. So what should the reaction be when we hear that, okay, you have to pay with cryptocurrency?
Never. The answer is never. There's never a scenario that a legitimate company will call you and tell you that you have to, or send you an email or text and tell you that you have to pay in cryptocurrency. If that happens, that's it. You know, delete that email and hang up the phone. It's not a legitimate business or government agency that is calling you.
Yeah, exactly. So after we've dealt with either the credit card company or the payment processor, should we file a report with the FTC as well?
Absolutely. So you file a report, you help us go after the bad guys, which is a big part of what we do. You also, if you go on our website, you can see information about if you think that you're a subject for identity theft, which is something that can happen, especially if you provide somebody your payment information on a website. you can see information on how to respond to that. In order to report to the FTC, you just go to report fraud, one word, .ftc.gov. And there's a very quick way to provide information about your incident.
Okay. And then give us again the other webpage on ftc.gov where people can go for more information and learn more about how to protect themselves from these payment fraud scams.
Sure. You go to ftc.gov/consumeralerts, one word, and there you're going to get information about all the more pervasive and common and recent frauds. We also have specific web pages about each of the payment methods that are problematic that we discussed here. So for example, there's ftc.gov/giftcards, and that will tell you more about scams using gift cards. And there also the gift cards, remember, gift cards are for gifts. Anybody that asks you to pay with a gift card, again, cannot be legitimate, like with cryptocurrency. And there will be a place for a web page, ftc.gov/wiringmoney, that deal with wire transfers in connection with fraud. ftc.gov/mobile payments, that will address mobile payments related frauds. And ftc.gov/fake checks, that will deal with the fake check scenario scams like the one you described earlier.
Okay, awesome. That sounds like a lot of great resources. So once again, the website is ftc.gov, but there are many different pages. So for example, ftc.gov/consumeralerts is the place to start. That's going to give you the high-level overview of a lot of these scams, what to look out for, how to avoid them, what to do if you've been scammed. And then the specific ones, if you want to learn more and go deeper into the specific scams that are happening right now that are so prevalent, ftc.gov/giftcards, ftc.gov/wiringmoney, ftc.gov/mobile payments, ftc.gov/fake checks. And if all goes wrong and you actually have been defrauded of your money and you discover that you have been the victim of a scam, deal with the payment processor or the credit card issuer first and foremost, but then don't forget to report the scam to the FTC, and that's going to be at reportfraud.ftc.gov, reportfraud.ftc.gov. Dotan, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know more about these scams and how to protect ourselves. It's very crucial because, as we mentioned, you know, these frauds, these scams are just getting more and more sophisticated, more and more prevalent, and it's really crucial to know how to protect ourselves. So I really appreciate your time and expertise. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes, but I'm not a criminal.
I work for youth advocate programs, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, and get a job.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration and neighborhood violence. Youth advocate programs. Learn how at yapinc.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me today is Ingrid Berkeley, Senior Product Marketing Manager for Controls and Indoor Air Quality at Lennox Industries. Through her work, Ingrid has witnessed the transformative power of healthy indoor air, from homeowners who no longer needed weekly allergy shots to kids with asthma experiencing a better quality of life. Lennox recently did a survey that showed 89% of homeowners would consider smart home technology a major selling point when buying a new home. Ingrid, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So how popular is smart technology right now?
Well, as you can imagine, smart technology is super popular right now. So you have anything from your DIY virtual assistants like Amazon Alexa to the more premium products such as your Control 4. But I don't know about you. I can't live without some of the home automation features that I get from like my lighting. I know that if I'm coming home late at night, I have my lights on, and that's invaluable to me.
Which features besides lighting do you think appeal most to most people?
So in a recent survey that we did, we saw that 65% of homeowners were interested in switching to a smart thermostat. However, only 25% of them actually had one. And some of the features that they actually were interested were humidity control, energy optimization, and energy savings. We have some smart thermostats out there in the market that will actually have some features. For example, smart scheduling. We have Schedule IQ that with a smart away mode will actually learn the routines of the homeowner so that it can create a more energy optimization schedule for them and in turn save energy, which equates to saving money.
Nice. Okay. So I did mention that respondents saw smart home technology as a major selling point for new homes, but how much does smart technology actually increase the value of our home?
So it's hard to pinpoint an exact number, right? But what I can tell you is that in that research, we also found that 59% of them were a little bit worried about the quality of air inside their home. So there's a lot of different technologies that they're really looking at. So when you pair different products together that work together, they will ensure that you have the highest level of high-tech technology out there. So for example, we have a Lennox S40 smart thermostat that will work with a smart air quality monitor, and that will clean the air on demand for our homeowner. So that will ensure that they're breathing the most cleanest, comfortable air inside their home, which will provide extreme value to a homeowner.
How does the indoor air quality meter actually work? What does it hook up to? So we know that the smart thermostat replaces a normal thermostat, and it's going to be adjusting the temperature and that kind of thing. And we know that smart lighting replaces our normal lighting, and therefore we can control it from where we are or do different things with it, change the colors, you know, what have you. But what do we need to work to actually improve our indoor air quality and remove indoor air contaminants?
Yes, we know that indoor air quality is extremely important to maintain that home safe and comfortable. So we also know that 2/3 of homeowners have pets, and we know that 1/3 suffer from allergies. So with a smart air quality monitor, it will be able to measure different contaminants such as pollutants, right? Particulate matter. And particulate matter will be your dust, pollen, pet dander, your viruses and bacteria. So when it sees that there is bad air quality inside the home, what it will do is that it will work with your system and that S40 smart thermostat to cycle the system and clean the air on demand. So again, that will ensure that you're breathing the healthiest, cleanest air. It's really a unique product, Heather. What it does is that it's going to, on demand, promote filtration, purification, and ventilation as long as you pair the system together.
So it's triggering like a HEPA filter type of system?
Absolutely. You can put either a high efficiency filter, we recommend at least a MERV 16 there. You can do an air purification product such as a Pure Air. And then you could also put a ventilation system such as an HRV or an ERV.
Okay. Now, obviously, smart technology costs more than your normal dumb version of technology, but you know, it can also save us money. So where's the tipping point? How affordable can smart technology be when we incorporate the fact that it's actually saving money on our energy bills?
So yes, you have to consider that it is an entire system, right? When you pair the smart technology along with a smart communicating system, you will see those benefits of energy savings. So that will trigger a lot of the features, such as I mentioned, that smart away mode that will work with the GPS on your phone to track when you're not home, and it will revert to an energy optimization schedule. And then when you are returning home, it will actually move that schedule to be a more comfortable schedule for when you return home. So when you pair all those products together, it will actually help you with saving energy, and that will obviously equate to saving money.
Okay, awesome. So where can our listeners go to learn more about smart technology and how they can use it to improve their own indoor air quality at home?
We recommend that they contact their local Lennox dealer to learn more about our products. And they can also go to Lennox.com, our website, where they can find more information on our products or contact a local Lennox dealer.
Okay, nice. So Lennox.com, once again, is the website to go to, Lennox.com, if you want to find out more about the smart technology available from Lennox. And Ingrid, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting people know some of the technology that's available and what it's doing now and how it can make our lives better. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me today is Lee Purvis, Senior Director of Healthcare Costs and Access in AARP's Public Policy Institute. Lee has testified before Congress on behalf of AARP and speaks frequently on a wide variety of prescription drug-related issues. Brand name drug prices have grown faster than general inflation for more than a decade, but last year, historic legislation was passed that will lower the prices of prescription drugs and put money back in the pockets of seniors. Lee, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, what is this historic legislation and what changes will Medicare participants start to see this year as a result?
So this is all part of a new law that was passed in late summer of last year, and it includes a lot of provisions that will help Medicare beneficiaries, three of which have already started. The first is that Medicare beneficiaries can now get recommended vaccines for free. The second is that Medicare beneficiaries and prescription drug plans now have a limit on their monthly costs for insulin of $35. And the final change that just started is that drug companies are now going to be penalized for increasing their prices faster than inflation, which, as we know, has been a pretty common practice by many brand name drug companies. And this will hopefully discourage them from taking those big price increases in the future.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So limiting the cost on insulin to $35, that sounds fantastic. Can you put that into perspective? What has it been in the past to get insulin?
So previously, Medicare beneficiaries were paying an average of just over $50 for an insulin prescription. And some of them were paying upwards of $100 for their insulin prescriptions. So the $35 limit on cost sharing is a real meaningful improvement for people who are taking insulin and will hopefully make it easier for them to access the drug that they need.
Yeah, that's great news. So how many people in Nevada are on Medicare and use insulin?
There are total about 550,000 people on Medicare, and of them, about 22,000 are using insulin.
Wow, that's a lot.
It absolutely is, which is why we were so excited about that improvement, because it's going to help a lot of people.
Yeah. So all those people who now have access to lower cost insulin, what will that mean to them on a day-to-day basis when they need this to manage their health?
This really speaks to what we've been hearing from a lot of our members who are having to make those tough decisions between paying for the drugs that they need and paying for other important things like their rent or their food. And the hope and expectation is that by limiting the costs for insulin, that will help all of those people who are facing those tough decisions, which frankly, we don't think anyone should have to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned that three of the changes from the legislation last summer have already kicked in. What are some of the other changes we'll start to see in the future, and when can we expect them to start?
Yeah, there are definitely some big changes coming soon. One of the most important is that Medicare is going to start phasing in a limitation on how much people have to pay every year on their prescription drugs when they're enrolled in a prescription drug plan. And by 2025, that annual limit will be $2,000 per year, which is an incredible improvement because we know that many, many people were paying upwards of $10,000 per year for their prescription drugs. So that's an important new protection. And another really big important change is that Medicare is now going to be able to negotiate the prices of popular prescription drugs. They're going to start with 10, and we'll see that list this fall. And the negotiated prices will become available in 2026. But they'll continue adding new drugs every year, and we could see as many as 60 drugs with negotiated prices by 2030.
Nice. Okay. Now, typically when you think of prices being lowered, then, you know, that means that the cost of that actual product was lowered. So is it a matter of the prescription drugs were overpriced to begin with, or is the rest of that money being subsidized now in a different way?
That's a really good question. And there are a lot of very smart people who are trying to decide whether prescription drug prices are justified. A lot of the protections that are included in this new law addressed cost sharing, in which case the price may not necessarily be affected. However, when it comes to penalizing drug companies that increase their prices faster than inflation and negotiation, that is attacking kind of the heart of the problem, which is the price itself. So that's why we're so happy, frankly, with this new law, because it addresses both sides of the coin, both the costs that people are paying at the pharmacy counter and then the underlying prices that are driving a lot of what we're seeing.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of great news. So where can our listeners go to learn more about these issues and find out some of the details about the legislation and what it's going to mean to them in the future?
People who want to learn more can go to aarp.org/rx.
Okay, nice. aarp.org/rx is the website to go to, aarp.org/rx. And Lee, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing this news with us. I'm sure a lot of people were not aware, and everything you said was absolutely positive and looks like a bright future. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is Dr. Emmanuel Finette, staff physician in the Heart, Vascular, and Thoracic Institute at Cleveland Clinic. February is American Heart Month, and according to the Cleveland Clinic's 2023 Heart Health Survey, almost half of Americans say that the cost of healthy foods is the biggest barrier to eating heart healthy. Dr. Finette, thank you so much for being here today.
Heather, thanks for having me in your program.
So how exactly does diet affect heart health?
Well, diet contributes to many of the risk factors that we have for cardiovascular disease. For example, hypertension or obesity, diabetes or high cholesterol. So if we have a poor diet, we can actually have increased risk of cardiovascular disease through those risk factors.
Okay, what constitutes a healthy diet when we're talking about heart health?
A healthy diet, it's really been repeatedly shown to be a diet that we normally call a Mediterranean diet. That is a diet that is rich in fruits and vegetables, nuts, beans, and legumes, as well as fish or chicken or other type of a poultry and seafood. So that's been the diet that has been shown to decrease cardiovascular risk.
Okay. Now, besides cost, what are some other barriers to healthy eating that survey respondents mentioned?
Well, like you mentioned, cost is the biggest one, but also patients just don't know how to cook, or they say don't have time. And sometimes social gatherings can, you know, make patients or people just make unhealthy choices. So I think those are the greatest barriers that we can actually see, and those are common.
Okay. So since cost is one of the biggest issues, what are some tips to eating heart healthy on a budget?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the CDC recommends to try to focus on cooking at home, to plan our meals, to go to the store with a list when we have to shop, to take advantage of, the sales or coupons that the store may give us, and also the store brands tend to be more affordable, and not to forget the frozen vegetables that usually are equally nutritious, and all those are means that we can actually decrease our costs when we shop.
Okay. And what if someone has dietary restrictions or allergies that prevent them from eating a lot of the healthier foods?
Well, main dietary restrictions are there because of allergens, and obviously they should avoid that. But I think those should be a minority of cases.
Okay. Now, what are some of the big misconceptions that Americans have when it comes to eating heart healthy?
That's a great question. One of the biggest misconceptions actually is that the diets that we normally call low-fat diets or low-carb diets are actually best for our heart health. And in reality, they are not. As I mentioned, the Mediterranean diet has been shown to be repeatedly the best diet to decrease our cardiovascular risk factors. Other diets can help with weight loss, but not necessarily decrease cardiovascular risk.
So the Mediterranean diet, it's not a low-fat diet. It has fat in it, but it has healthy fat, right? So what's the difference between healthy and unhealthy fats?
That is a fantastical question. So yes, the Mediterranean diet has a high concentration of omega-3 fats, commonly found in some vegetables, like olives, for example. That's why olive oil is good, and as well as some fish and seafood. So high concentrations of omega-3 as actually are the healthy fats like you're calling.
Okay. Now, obviously, you know, eating healthier and starting to follow the Mediterranean diet, eating those healthier foods is going to help us build a better heart health. But what are some other steps that people can take to prevent heart disease?
The American Heart Association sort of summarizes this 8 steps in which we can take charge. One is to eat healthy, to lose weight, to stop smoking, diabetes, and control our risk factors like blood pressure, obesity, and other things. So for more information, I would invite our listeners to go to clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheart.
Okay, nice. Now, how important is it for patients to discuss nutrition and exercise with their doctors instead of just going it alone?
It is extremely important. Education of patients empowers them to take control of their health.
Okay. So once again, the website to go to is clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheart, clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheart. And Dr. Finette, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing some information, helping people live healthier for American Heart Month. I appreciate your time and your expertise. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It was been a pleasure.
We don't want you on our team. You're too slow and fat.
This is weight bias.
Don't you care how you look?
Those with the serious disease called obesity face weight bias every day.
You're not the right fit for this job.
And blame themselves.
I wish I was different.
Weight bias hurts.
Let's stop weight bias.
Be part of the solution.
Go to stopweightbias.com, a public service message from Obesity Action Coalition.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, February 6 at 8 p.m., benefiting the Adopt-A-Vet Dental Program, and Monday, February 20th at 8 p.m., benefiting Poor Richard's Players. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Springs Preserve is hosting the 14th annual Black History Month Festival to commemorate the contributions of African Americans to Southern Nevada's rich history and culture on Saturday, February 18th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Springs Preserve. There's free parking at the preserve with overflow parking across the street at Meadows Mall. Find out more details or get your advance tickets at springspreserve.org. That's springspreserve.org. The Shade Trees' third annual Champagne and Pearls fundraising brunch is happening Sunday, March 5th from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Emerald at Queens Ridge, 891 South Rampart. Each guest receives brunch, mimosas, an interactive panel discussion, gift bag, shopping experience, and more. This signature event celebrates Southern Nevada female trailblazers in advance of International Women's Day. All proceeds benefit the Shade Trees mission to provide safe shelter to domestic violence and human trafficking survivors and their children. Get your tickets or find out more at theshadetree.org. That's theshadetree.org. The second annual Links to Hope Golf Classic to support Hope Link of Southern Nevada is happening Friday, March 10th with an 8 a.m. shotgun start at Camara Golf Club in Henderson. Proceeds go towards Hope Link's mission of preventing homelessness, preserving families, and providing hope. The Golf Classic will also feature friendly competitions, prizes, and an afternoon awards banquet to recognize the day's winners. Sign up to golf, attend the banquet, or become a sponsor at linktohope.org. That's link, the number two, hope.org. The Junior League of Las Vegas is hosting its 20th annual Paint the Town Red event on Saturday, April 1st at 6 p.m. at the Venetian Resort. This is JLLV's largest annual fundraiser, honoring those who have made outstanding contributions to volunteerism and developing the potential of women in our local community. Find out more info or get your tickets at jllv.org. That's jllv.org. The Baller Dream Foundation and Circa Resort and Casino are hosting a celebrity poker tournament from April 28th to 30th at Circa Resort and Casino's 60th floor rooftop lounge, the Legacy Club. This three-day celebrity-filled weekend experience is hosted by Hall of Fame pitcher Greg Maddux to benefit young warriors battling cancer. Find out more, get your tickets, donate an item to the silent auction, or sign up to play poker at ballerdream.org. That's ballerdream.org. And Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their Walk for Wishes event on World Wish Day, Saturday, April 29th at Town Square, Las Vegas. Make-A-Wish chapters and affiliates across the globe come together each year to celebrate World Wish Day, the anniversary of the wish that inspired the founding of Make-A-Wish back in 1980. You can join in the celebration of more than 350,000 wishes that have already been granted while raising funds for future wishes. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv. That's wish.org/snv.